out at you, tracking my...
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The suspect in an apparent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump at a Florida golf course yesterday is facing federal gun charges. CBS's Manuel Bojorquez.
According to cell phone records, he may have been in that area roughly 12 hours before he was spotted, essentially lying in wait or preparing as prosecutors laid that out.
In suburban Houston, a vehicle strikes an above-ground pipeline valve after driving through a fence. The resulting massive fire prompts evacuations in Deer Park.
This pipeline exploded. The flames started shooting several hundred feet in the air. And on a 90-plus degree day here in southeast Texas, it was considerably hotter here near where the explosion happened.
CBS's Janet Shamlian. TikTok lawyers have been in court challenging a U.S. ban of the Chinese app. CBS's Jan Crawford says because of national security concerns, the hearing was not fully public.
The judges have access to it, and they can consider it, but the public, we won't be hearing some of that.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Enrollment at the Universities of Wisconsin has grown to nearly 164,000 students this fall, the highest total since 2020. Eight campuses saw higher enrollments, but some of that growth was impacted by some two-year branch campuses closing. Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance campaigns in Wisconsin Tuesday. James Kelly reports.
The rally is scheduled for 4:30 on Tuesday afternoon. The Eau Claire Event District also hosted a rally for Vice President Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz shortly after his introduction to the ticket. It's the second visit that Senator Vance has made to Eau Claire since joining former President Trump on the Republican ticket. I'm James Kelly.
Vice President Kamala Harris plans to speak in Madison Friday night. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I noticed when you buy toilets, they all have like these snazzy names. The Ambassador. Toilets do not do any kind of ambassadorship. This is for people who take huge dumps, this model.
The Ultimax.
The Ultimax. Why would you name a toilet that? Just a serial number is fine.
Every single toilet should be called the King's Throne. That's it.
Works. It's a lot easier.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. We're going to go back and look at the convention, the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, which we had an incredible time meeting people, talking to people, listeners coming up and saying, hey, love the show. A couple of people said, hey, changed how we look at politics, and it's why we're in that event. Some really great interactions with folks, and I want to thank everyone for that. But today we're going to look back at some of the interviews that we didn't get to play during the convention. We have limited time, but I wanted to make sure all the voices were heard. So this week we're going to be looking back while we're at the Midwest Labor Press Association's Education Conference outside of Chicago, which I'm looking forward to greatly. But we're going to go back and we'll look at the voices and the people that attended, the leaders today of the labor movement. John Costa from the Amalgamated Transit Union going to be here to talk about transit issues, talk about why they're supporting Kamala Harris. Keith Hossifer from the Bricklayers is going to be here, going to share some thoughts on what's important to them. John Nave, the president of the Kansas AFL-CIO, will be here. And Donald Nesbitt, executive vice president at Local 372, District Council 37 of AFSCME, going to share some thoughts on the work that they do. So very labor-focused today, as was the convention. As I said, while we were there, the word union was everywhere. the idea of that we've been talking about for years on this program finally filtering into the DNC and into the Democratic language, which is the way we reunite this country is to reunionize. The way we bring back equality of opportunity, equality of wages, to where we bring back some bit of balance is by reunionizing. Corporate America is doing wildly well, and yet every time you turn around, working people are tightening the belt to where they're either on the last notch or well past the last notch, having to get the hammer and the nail out to make a new hole to tighten the belt a little bit tighter. It shouldn't be that way in the wealthiest country on the planet, the wealthiest country in the history of humanity at its wealthiest point. Shouldn't be that way. We can do different things. And while we were at the convention, had a lot of those conversations around the idea of where do we want to go? And this is the positive stuff. This is the good stuff. This is what I love about politics. The discussions of what if, the discussions of how do we make lives better, the possibilities of using government in a way that makes lives better, that does the things, and you've heard me say this before, that does the things that we want done but can't do individually, so we have to do them collectively. This idea of using government to make lives better, to me, is really important. And the Democrats, quite frankly, exuded that entire, during their entire convention. Tim Walz, the walking embodiment of that. So for me, this convention, I hope, sticks. The hope is that Harris wins in November. Those ideas are not just hanging around, but are being pushed. Because in talking to my labor friends who were there, which something like 20% of the delegates in that arena were labor people. And as I've been saying for years, you want a labor party? Take one of the two over. Move them in the direction of being a labor party. And the Democrats and labor people are moving the Democratic Party in that direction. Because you know what we didn't hear anything of? We heard no neoliberalism. We heard both Obama and Clinton speak, and no neoliberal rhetoric. Nope. And when I hear that the neoliberals are upset, Rahm Emanuel, I go, good, about time. It's about time working people are at the front of the agenda, not an afterthought. And for me, that's this important moment. This is the time where, coming out of the pandemic, you have that collective anger. And on both sides, and look, I think that anger should be something that unites us, not tears us apart. If you watch the RNC, if you listen to Trump's speeches, that pain, that struggle, is what he uses to divide. This idea that we have an economy that works for everyone should be something everyone wants. Now, true, if you're one of the folks at the top who, quite frankly, have done very well over the last several decades, you probably don't want that, because you're probably going to do a little less better, but maybe not a lot less. This idea that we give opportunities to others doesn't mean necessarily that we lose them for ourselves. And that's the zero-sum game that's been thrown at us. This idea that if I'm doing well, and we do anything to make that guy over there's life better, somehow it's going to affect me. And they play on that, don't they? They use that to pit us against one another. Look, I want my neighbor to do well. I want my neighbor on both sides of me to do well. I want my neighbor down the street to do well. Because if he's doing well, if they're all doing well, the potential for me to do well is there also. And that's the kind of economy we should want. And elections should be one of those, to answer one of those questions. What kind of a society do we want? What kind of an election do we want? What kind of a people do we want to be? The fact that we held a debate and there was nobody there because people haven't figured out how to behave should send a pretty loud message. Not the country I want to be part of. I want a better place. I want a place where people can disagree. I know people I disagree with all the time, and we have civil back and forth discussions. Sometimes they get a little loud, but for the most part, they're just discussions. we can and should, again, with the right leadership, move back in that direction. But again, it comes back down to what I just say, the right leadership. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, John Costa from the Amalgamated Transit Union, we're going to share his interview with you after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So getting here was fun, was entertaining. I love the fact that they've locked this entire half of the city down in a security fortress. Everywhere you look, gates, and the poor transportation workers just trying to get around and navigate. You know, I give them nothing but credit for fighting through this convention. And here to share some thoughts on how we move America, how we build a transportation network that, well, will get us around from city to city and make transportation a little easier. I've asked my good friend John Costa to come sit down with us. He's the president of the Amalgamated Transit Union, ATU. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me.
So how'd you get here today?
it took a while. We took a shuttle. We went from our hotel to the Plumbers Union, from the Plumbers Union, took a shuttle here. A lot of walking, a lot of time.
Getting those 10,000 steps in, are we?
Oh, we're getting them in, yeah.
So what do you think of this? I've been saying this is the most pro-labor convention I've ever seen. As a guy who's been around a little bit, thoughts?
Look, it's my first time being here at a convention at DNC, and I'm impressed. I'm impressed. Labor is all over. Meeting with a lot of Congress and senators, and getting our message across, what we need for our members. It's given me an opportunity to do a great job on lobbying for my members that I represent. As you say, the operator's job is not what it used to be. It's a very dangerous job, and we need to not only we still got a lot of work to do. We've accomplished a lot under the Joe delivered us some safety regs and a lot of money to keep us going, but we're still not safe. The buses still need to be redesigned. We need a better bus. We need a bus design that keeps our members safe.
Ultimately, that is your job, right? Taking care of your members, their wages, hours, and, of course, their conditions.
Yep. We're going to need operating fundings. It's going to dry up in 2025. Very important we keep the Senate. And love to flip the house if we can get all three. So I'm prepared. I know this is not an easy battle, but we're prepared to fight this, and we're all in to not only get Harris, but to keep the Senate and to flip the House.
No, it's something we desperately need as a country if we're going to move forward, if we're going to do the things we need to help us move down the road. So you were saying before we went on air that your a lot of your female members seem to be very energized. Having a kind of historic, having a woman on the ticket, having a black woman on the ticket, kind of a, to steal a Bidenism, kind of a big freaking deal.
Yeah, well, I was kind of disappointed that the FLCIO stole my line. I always said, if you want want to get something done, bring a woman onto your board. So, I have some international vice presidents that are women. I have my first, the Latina woman executive vice president at the top of the ATU that just got elected at our last convention. And they're all here, and I just see them all gleaming. I mean, you know, I have two daughters myself, so it's their moment, and I'm seeing it. I'm watching at the end of the night where I'm going, and just seeing the woman uniting and saying, "Hey, this is a great time."
Well, it's kind of a moment for them as their rights are really under attack.
Yeah,
I mean, right now, looking between the Harris Walls campaign and the Trump couch guy, there's kind of a difference, don't you think?
It's terrible what's happened here. You know, a woman's choice is not there. I mean, some of the speakers you had here was heartfelt. It's a big difference. It's very important if we want to keep freedom. I think Harris is the way to go, especially if you're a woman, for your rights, reproductive rights, and it's just.
Now, you talk about your daughters. I mean, I have two daughters myself. I am not someone who's pro-abortion. I've always said I'm pro-safety. I don't want my daughters to have to make choices that their grandmother's generation had to make. I'm not going to encourage it, but I want them to come home safe every day. And I want it safe and legal and all of that, which doesn't mean I'm in favor of it, but it means it should be safe and legal and not my choice.
Well, I believe in choice, and like you said, it's a shame that, you know, my daughters have less rights than their mother has, you know, and growing up in my time and where they're at and where we're going if we don't make this happen. And we've already witnessed 4 years of Trump. You know, I got nothing done with him, no safety. Everything was a joke when it came to my members. Didn't think we needed anything. Labor board sucked, you know. Transportation sucked. Yeah, the administration had nobody. It was all about, nobody was listening. Nobody cared.
Right.
They didn't know what they were doing.
And this is where working people need to hear that. Mm-hmm. We need to remember. I know we forget. It's easy to have a little historical amnesia, but it's important to hear guys like you explain just how bad the Trump years were in representing workers and how badly we were getting screwed.
We've already saw it.
Yeah, but we've seen it.
Yeah.
You know, because I cover this stuff. You live through it. The mm-hmm. average everyday worker, they don't get behind the curtain. They're just trying to stay afloat. They're seeing those snippets on the news. Getting behind the scenes where you are, seeing how bad that was, I think that message has to get out there more than how much better it's been now.
Look, here's a guy that wants to fire strikers. You know what I mean? Like, what more do I need to say?
Yeah.
If you're a union person, he said it. You know, fire him. I've had that administration in 2019 where I had Thomas Dunn was murdered on a bus. You know, and we tried to get some recognition for safety and nothing. They were like, we don't need it. They don't see a need for it. They don't even know what's happening. So
they don't care it's happening. I'm sure they know. And this is where my problem has always been with looking to a billionaire to be our savior. Our savior isn't looking us in the mirror. It's us coming together and fighting for the country that we want. There's no savior in this.
No. No. If we have a short window here, we got to make this happen. Momentum's there. If this doesn't happen for us, our members. And I try to tell them, vote for your job.
Right.
You know, vote for this guy is not going to do anything for us. He's not going to put operating funding in for us. He's not going to do nothing with our safety on a new bus. He doesn't care. Like you said, they don't care. It's just going to be about cutting taxes for the rich and the middle class.
Now you. I thought you were heading to the place where I think your things will go if there is a Trump administration, which means your union's going to be basically just decimated.
Yep.
They want to destroy unions entirely. Yep. They've done a great job over the last 40 years of hamstringing and attacking. I think this would be the final blow.
Yep. We will not. Under the last administration, we had the funding, the layoffs. We didn't have to worry about that. They made sure we did the right thing with the when we had COVID. They kept everybody working. My members made a lot of money. Contracts, some of the best contracts we got out of Joe Biden and his labor administration. And I'm just hoping Harris keeps that momentum going. And like I said, very important that we keep the Senate and flip the House.
Have you had talks with them, the Harris Walls people, and get, have any of those assurances that they're going to pick up where Joe left off?
No, I'm not going to lie. I have not had the opportunity to sit down and have anything. This all happened fast, as you know. Woke up one day and Joe decided to step down and we did the early endorsement for Harris. We believe she's the best for our members, our executive board. We met, we discussed, and they felt the same. So we went in early and we're all in.
Well, John, I appreciate you coming sitting down with us. Thanks for the work you do and enjoy the convention.
Thank you, Ed. Good seeing you.
You as well. Our good friend John Costa. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, we're going to rebuild this country brick by brick if we have to, and my next guest is going to make sure that they are bricks, and that they're going to be straight, not like I would do at my house, but they're going to be done by well-trained, well-paid professionals who are going to build products and infrastructure that are going to be around for generations to come. That's why I'm glad that Keith Hosover is here sitting with me. He's an executive vice president with the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Members, our BAC friends. Keith, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
So we're going to rebuild this country brick by brick, right?
Yes, yes.
And it's going to be bricks.
Yes, definitely. And that's one thing that the Biden-Harris administration's done for us is they've actually, with the amount of work from the infrastructure bills, that we're in a generational moment right now that we're not going to see this amount of work in probably another generation. So all the unions are really trying to take advantage of that, the amount of work that's going on, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, because everybody I talk to in the trades, they're humming on all levels. Whereas during the Trump years, not as much. A lot of promise of infrastructure, but not quite as much. And your apprenticeship programs are full. I know this because I'm trying to get my kid into a couple of them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, send them over to Bricklayers. We'll get you right in. We'll get you in and we'll get you to work. We have plenty of it.
No, that's a great thing. And you've got some cool toys, too. I saw at the AFL convention they got these things that you don't even pick the bricks up anymore.
Oh, well, the mule. Yeah, the mule, yeah. And then, we have alternate reality now where they're taking, and it's not virtual reality where you can actually, alternate reality, you can actually see around you. So what they're doing is taking complex architectural structures that are made out of masonry, and you can actually see the wall where you should be putting the bricks to make them arches. And, yeah, it's amazing. So even technology is getting to a one on top of two trade.
So are we concerned that, you know, the art of being a bricklayer might be compromised by this kind of technology? Or is this just another tool to help make that skill better?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it does is it allows, I mean, the craftsmanship and how material, basically when you become a journeyman is knowing material limitations. So how far can you make a brick? How can you corbel it out? How far can you go up with it before you have to do additional reinforcement? So for us, really the craft and the skill of being a bricklayer is always going to be there because that material limitation is kind of what you're looking at. I think the alternate reality is going to help us because it's going to allow us to bring some more of the artsy type of brick buildings. You go down through Chicago and you see some
amazing
work.
Stuff. Amazing. Oh, yeah. Amazing. And I got to tell you, I'm not going to walk under one of those arches built by some shoemaker who saw it in a book.
You're a smart man. You're a smart man.
Because I've been hit by bricks before. It's no fun.
Right, exactly. It is not fun. And it does hurt. It'll leave a mark, that's for sure.
So, you know, look, I've been looking around this convention, been saying that this is one of the most pro-labor conventions that I have seen. I've been talking to a lot of building trades people who I know, look, like a lot of industrial unions and a lot of building trade unions have members on both sides of the divide. Mm-hmm. You know, in looking at this, what are you taking back to them, your members, as we go towards towards election time, because I believe you guys have endorsed the Harris Wall ticket,
yes,
right?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
Yeah. So going back, because you got to explain that. You got to say, this is why we're leading you in this direction. What are you saying?
Well, we're telling them that, you know, basically they pay us to help make sure that our members are safe and protected. And what we do with the in terms of people that might not agree with certain campaign or policies that Trump has, you know, I mean, I think our members are getting more educated on what's best for them, because the misinformation that they get from the other side is so immense a lot of times that we trying to keep up with that.
Yeah.
It's really hard because they mention things that are just so just crazy sometimes that, you know, where do you start from? And where, I mean, you just try to cover up and try to explain what's being lied to them. I mean, really, with the amount of lies that goes on, it's tough.
I think they've given you the ultimate tool. This Project 2025 is really the ultimate tool. And all you got to do is rip, I think it's page 604 out, where they want to do away with project labor agreements and prevailing wage. And I think, and I'm hoping in this moment, we start thinking about our paychecks again. We start thinking about our jobs. And if you want to talk about freedom, there's no greater freedom than having job security with decent wages, hours, and conditions.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And now unions are looked at in a different way. I mean, our public approval is its highest levels as it's ever been.
Right.
And so people are understanding what it's like to want to work and get respected at work and get paid a decent wage. And I think it really is, people are starting to get it. So we're optimistic.
Have you been to many? Hey, well, have you been to one of these conventions in the past?
I went to Philadelphia in 2015. It was a little bit different, but it was great.
I was there as well. It was an interesting time, but this much better, much more electric, I think.
Oh, yes, yes. And back then, you had the Hillary and Bernie, issues going on at the time. And so I think this is a more uniting type of convention than the other one was, where it was more trying to bring people back together. I think the Democratic Party is together.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, pushing forward and taking in our grassroots on the building trade side, we're going to be hitting the ground running here for the next couple months. And, you know, we're going to get members out to, you know, we're going to educate the members and we're going to get them out to vote. So
you're an Ohio guy like I am. I grew up in Cleveland.
Yeah.
You out there in Mentor. Any chance Ohio's in play?
Sher Brown is, when you talk about Ohio, we look at Sher Brown and all the great things he's done. So I think maybe Ohio, we're still going to work. We're going to work in all the states, not just the battleground states. So that's positive. But, you know, anytime you get out the voter turnout, it can be close. Ohio can be had.
Just got to do the work, right?
Oh, amen. Amen.
So leaving here after taking all this energy and excitement, where are you heading next?
Michigan. So next week I'll be going to Michigan, and the executive board for the Bricklayers Union, Tim Driscoll, Jerry Sullivan, and myself are going to be hitting the battleground states twice by one of us three within the next couple months, and we're going to get out. We're going to even go door-to-door with our members. We're going to go to job sites. We're going to talk to them and educate them about any questions that they have. We're not going to try to force-feed any kind of thing down their throats in terms of this is what you should believe. We're just going to try to put out, we have such a good base of materials to use that we can pass along to our members. I think we're confident that we can put together a really good push for this. So.
Yeah, I think Trump's comment about firing striking workers, you know, being, you know, a nice thing, I got to think that's going to play, no?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the, you know, our workers are starting to realize more and more, I think, about, you know, the promises Trump made, like you mentioned earlier. Trump made a lot of promises about infrastructure, and he never came through. So when it goes back on a person of your word and trying to be your word, if we can keep on going towards that angle, I think some people's lights are going to turn on. Because, I mean, for us, we did a focus group. And we did a few different battleground state focus groups. And, you know, a lot of the members were really upset about the insurrection. You know,
well, you've got a lot of veterans.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that really hit a lot of people in a way that I think was, you know, made them push away from Trump some.
I mean, the building trades, heavily military, heavily veterans. Okay. So I can't imagine that the comments about the Congressional Medal of Honor are going to play well with them either.
Yeah. I mean, just joking about that, even if he wasn't serious. You know, I mean, it's something that they take very seriously. We do a lot of work with Helmets to Hard Hats through the National Building Trades. So like you said, yeah, we have a lot of veterans that take pride in their work and their country. And, yeah, I think they're starting to see Donald Trump for what he really is.
Keith Osifer, Executive Vice President of the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. It is great to see you. Thanks for taking some time, and get out there and motivate.
We will. We will. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Keith. I appreciate the time. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back here from the UC in Chicago, the Democratic National Convention.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight with lows in the low 60s. And sunshine is ahead for Tuesday and Wednesday. Mild for this time of year with highs right around 80. And into the low 80s for Thursday and Friday. Chance of rain for the upcoming weekend. It's 67 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Kamala Harris was so classy. What did you think of the debate? My friend and Milwaukee County Board Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson.
As a woman of color, she ran a clinic on how to school a mediocre white man. And on the other end, you have Trump, who was angry and rattled and showed why he was unfit to be president.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as the weeks, the days, the hours to Election Day tick down and the political horse race hits its stride, we're going to hear from, you know, from all kinds of pundits and so-called experts who are going to handicap each and every decision, position, policy, every utterance. So it's easy to focus on the minutiae of the day without seeing the bigger picture. Too often we're focused on the elephants behind instead of, well, seeing the entire elephant. And that's why my next guest's new book is so important. Out now to help us see the entire political field, maybe a view from like 50,000 feet. Bob Kramer is a longtime political organizer, strategist, co-founder of Democracy Partners, and the author of this newly released must-read political how-to book, Nuts and Bolts, The Formula for Progressive Electoral Success. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here with you, Rick.
So great book. As I said, the view from 50,000 feet and perfect timing coming out of the convention, because this convention, tons of energy, tons of, you know, just great messaging. And I was saying, coming out of this, what's that going to look like? You know, walk me through what you see. What you see should be coming out of the convention and where we go in the days up to the election.
Well, you know, Vince Lombardi, the great Green Bay Packer coach, you know, used to start each season with this great team by picking up a football and saying, gentlemen, this is a football. You know, he was focused on the fundamentals and executing. And I think that's where we got to be, executing the fundamentals of both political communication and great organizing. Fundamentally, I think this is a turnout election. We got to mobilize our people,
right,
and make sure they go to the polls, because there are more of us than there are of them if we all go to vote. And you know, this book elaborates a number of different kind of fundamentals. There are a couple of them that I think are particularly germane now. The first and foremost, when it comes to political communication, comes from the poet Maya Angelou, who said, "I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And that, it seems to me, is the crux of what we've got to do. People have got to feel, on the one hand, that our candidates are on their side, and on the other hand, feel inspired. And, you know, an inspiration means something really specific. It means you feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Right.
But that you yourself can play a significant role in achieving the bigger goal.
Yeah, which is why I've been saying, you know, one of the things I hope the Harris campaign does is to reach for ideas and policies that are aspirational, that are bigger than just this moment. The idea of, you know, creating a world that's worthy of being handed off to the next generation, being part of that. And I think she, to a small extent, has done some of that. There's a long way to go, but let me ask you, right path, wrong path?
Well, I think they're moving down the right path. A new way forward is her new slogan. And that focuses on the economic issues that will help people afford their lives. And that says to people, I'm on your side, but also says, you know, saying it is, we got to do this together.
Yeah.
And that's so critical to this feeling of inspiration. And of course, building an army is also enormously important. And she inherited a structure at the Biden campaign had built over months that was ready to absorb this massive influx of volunteers that happened when she became the candidate. And that's very exciting because building armies is viral. It spreads, you know?
No, look, enthusiasm builds on enthusiasm. No, it's great. And that convention showed it. But, you know, in your book, you talk a lot about, you know, kind of what I would view as like old school kind of retail politics. You get out there and press the flesh, shake hands, kiss babies, do all that stuff, knock on doors, make phone calls. Whereas some of the thought process, and I'm not going to pick on a Democratic candidate from 2016 who I don't think did enough of it. But, you know, kind of going back to the old principles of just getting out there and doing the work.
Absolutely. You know, for a long time, there was a time when we heard that the new precinct captain is the television. No, it's not. I mean, the new precinct captain is volunteers out there talking to their neighbors. Tim Wallace brings that whole spirit too to the campaign. He's just, you know, understands being a neighbor and mobilizing people that way. One of the other major rules that I've talked about in there is essentially bandwagon. One of the major ways people are persuaded is through social proof. What are their neighbors doing? That's why things like yard signs matter. That's why, you know, what they hear from people at the door matter. By the way, when it comes to the question of what is the best message to get out people to vote who are not going to vote if they don't, they would vote for us if they just went out to vote. There are a bunch of messages that work. Inspiration is one of them, by the way. But another one is, I won't get off your porch until you vote. And that one works better than anything else, really. I mean, we see empirically. I mean, there are just major increases. I mean, give an example. In New York 3, remember when we were trying to replace Santos with the New York Times Siena poll had it even up the weekend before the election, because their projection was 50% voter turnout for Democrats, 50% for Republican registrants. They forgot there were 300,000 phone calls, 150,000 door knocks. And so our turnout was 8% better than they expected. And we won by 8 points. What a shock. I mean, this stuff really does matter. Yeah. And building armies and volunteering, that's why it's also not a question of what are they going to do. It's a question of what we're going to do in the next 2 months.
Don, I think you hit on that in the book, on the idea that there are more registered Democrats. You know, and it's, you know, you just got to motivate them to get to the polls, which is why trying to make it easier to vote is something that Democrats try to do, and why Republicans try and block that, because they know, they understand the same math as well.
Absolutely. That's why they do voter suppression for a living. They know if everybody votes, they don't win, because most people don't support things like having the government come into your exam room, or making it more difficult to form unions and stick up for your wages and working conditions. You know, I mean, they're perfectly happy for CEOs to make 399 times higher wages than the average worker in their plants. Think about that. Yeah. That's just astounding.
But here's the thing, and you know, you one of the talking points I use all the time, and you would think that that would be a motivator to get people out to vote. Because look, I've said there are more of us than there are of them. And not right, left, not red hat, blue hat, up, down, the working class versus, you know, our billionaire elites. There right. are more of them. We've out-procreated them, but they've got all this money and all this power that comes with, you know, with right-wing media, you know, talk radio, cable news, constant bombardment of messaging through digital media. It just seems like they've understood the idea of divide and conquer much better than we've figured out how to unite people.
Well, it is true that they understand divide and conquer. Part of this has to do with the narrative, though. I mean, our understanding of political messaging about a narrative, there's an antagonist and protagonist. And the antagonist in our narrative needs to be the real people who we're being antagonistic to. The billionaires and big corporations, not another group of people. And I think the Harris-Waltz campaign is beginning to really get that. You know, and people who are, a lot of people in these factory towns that had their cities denuded of jobs by NAFTA and so on, that appeals to them too. I mean, you know, making rich people pay their fair share. And making sure that people are empowered to form unions and raise their wages
right.
and end crazy gap, you know?
And this is why I thought Joe Biden had a really great message. I thought Biden had a good message. In 2022, we did a tour through a number of states through the Midwest. And we went to places that used to have factories that used to create good jobs for the community and used to provide the bedrock of Main Street. And those are gone. Now, a lot of those places, the biggest employers, the drug treatment center or the dollar store or something like that, instead of those high wage jobs that created a local economy. I look at Biden's investment in infrastructure and reshoring manufacturing as the great narrative of making those places the places that are going to be. And again, back to the idea of aspirational, the sad reality is I just didn't think he could deliver the punchline. Is this something you think Harris and Walz will pick up on? Because I haven't seen it as much as I would like. I'm curious your thought.
I hope so. I think the, as you say, the people are ready for that. But we can't just talk about what we did. We got to talk about, like you say, what we're going to do, because there's still a lot of people who have a hard time paying for their lives. And I think she's focused on that. Her new kind of framing, a new way forward, helps that. Not only do we have to convince people that the country is on a knife's edge and we could veer toward fascism and authoritarianism, we lose, but if we have a trifecta, if we win the House, the Senate, and the presidency, we could have the most progressive period in modern American history next year, 2025. We could pass all this legislation that affects people's jobs. We could pass, double down on infrastructure. We could pass gun violence legislation that really helps address this horrible gun violence epidemic we have. We could, you know, and raise Social Security and not cut it. We do all those things if we win like that next year.
Well, we can do the things that, you know, as I say, you know, government is to do the things collectively that we can't do individually, like educate a populace, like make sure that people have health security, have some bit of retirement security. Yes. Those are the things that we should be shoring up and allowing people to understand that we're all in this together. What the right has done masterfully, in my view, Bob, over the years, is they've pitched this hyper, hooray for me, the heck with everybody else mentality, this hyper-individualism, which has torn us apart in many ways, but more importantly, torn us apart enough to create the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization and to make us feel that we're hopeless in changing what we see in front of us.
And we have to have, as my colleague Reggie Hubbard says, you got to give them hope if you want them to vote. And that's true. And that's why we got to focus on what we're going to do, not just on the horrors of what they would do if they take back.
No, and there's a lot of horrors. If you just read their book, Project 2025. But while you're reading that, pick up Nuts and Bolts, The Formula for Progressive Electoral Success by Bob Cramer. Wherever you get your favorite books, you will find this. What are you hoping comes out of this, Bob? I mean, this is it's a fascinating book. There's a lot of just packed with information and, you know, on everything political. What are you hoping comes out of this?
Well, I'm hoping that it can be a tool to train organizers who take upon themselves the responsibility of creating the political movement we've got to have to make that modern American, the best, the most progressive period of modern American history happen, both now and as we carry it on, because they ain't going to roll over and play dead if we win this fall. We're going to have to fight for all of these things, but they're very popular. And if we just mobilize people and do that by executing these fundamentals that we talk about in the book, I think we can win.
So what's the gap between, as you said, these ideas are very popular, and I know they are. They're even popular with my red hat friends. I guess the question I keep coming back to is, how did Democrats so badly bungle what are very popular positions and that could make people's lives better? How do we screw this messaging up when we've got the ideas, we've got the policies, you've got all of that stuff, and just not, well, connecting?
Well, part of the problem has been the system of campaign finance reform we have that requires that we depend partially on some of the people we want to make pay their fair share, right? And one of the things we got to do first out next year is to change the system of financing elections, to make it more reliant on ordinary people by amplifying their donations, small donations. And the other thing we got to do is Freedom of Choice Act, the John Lewis Freedom of Choice. I mean, John Lewis.
Freedom to Vote Act. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Because we got to make sure everybody can vote. I mean, I think we stop bungling when we understand that our job is to be inclusive and to address this whole question of making people be able to afford their lives and make that the centerpiece of what we're doing, and don't be intimidated by folks who just want to make a whole lot of money and then try and pay off politicians to keep them moderate.
Yeah, because no, you're right here, because everyone, regardless of political stripes, and I say this all the time, our problems are not right left as much as they are up down. Because on both sides, everyone agrees who the problem is and where the problem lies. And yet we just never seem to come to that action point to where we actually get something done.
Well, we got a lot done in the last couple of years, in the first 2 years of the Biden administration, right? I mean, you agree with that totally, I know.
No, I think his administration's been transformational. But again, you know, as somebody who goes, we need more.
Yes.
We got a 1% tax on stock buybacks. I'm like, we should be outlawing those entirely. But I guess 1% is a step getting where I would like to be.
Well, and as long as we have three families who control as much wealth as the bottom 50% of the population, that's outrageous. And history will look back on our society and say, how is that allowed to be possible? I mean, the same way we look back on medieval societies and how did anybody think the king had a right to govern just because of who his daddy was,
right?
So, I mean, it's an anachronism that we're going to have to face, but if ordinary people agree with that, if we just talk about it. So we have to have that strong populist frame, I think, in order to win.
There you go. Last question I've got for you. How do we take this knowledge, this information, the stuff that comes out of Nuts and Bolts and put this into practice and move this country in the right direction? What's the marching order coming out of this?
The main marching order coming out of it is in this next 2 weeks, 2 months rather, we have to understand that Tim Walz is right. There's lots of time to sleep when we die. We got lots of work to do, and it's up to us. It's not up to the politicians who are running to just do the right thing. It's all up to us to turn out the vote and to communicate with our neighbors and to build the armies necessary to win in November.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of grassroots organizing. And look, I think back to FDR's. I remember the story. Someone said, hey, I need you to want you to do this. And he said, well, get out in the streets and make me do it. And that, to me, is the message. The book, Nuts and Bolts, The Formula for Progressive Electoral Success. Bob Kramer, the author. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at this. Bob, great talking to you.
On Amazon and everything, all the other online.
The dreaded A word.
Well, that is dreaded. You could also get it on Barnes & Noble and the Book Nook and all those.
There you go. Good stuff. Okay. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1851. That was the day that a Maryland planter named Edward Gorsuch was killed in Christiana, Pennsylvania. Gorsuch had come to Pennsylvania to try and recapture three black men that had escaped from slavery on his farm outside of Baltimore 2 years earlier. A year after the men escaped, Congress passed the Fugitive Slave Act. This penalized helping those who had escaped slavery with a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. Emboldened by the law, slave catchers chased those who had made the journey to freedom in the North. Gorsuch received news that the men he was looking for were in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Two of the escaped slaves were at the farm of William Parker, a black man who had also escaped slavery in Maryland. Located just north of the Mason-Dixon line, Lancaster had a well-established Underground Railroad network. An armed black self-defense group had developed to stand against the slave catchers. Gorsuch and his son gathered a group of men and headed north. At the Parker farm, they were confronted by a group of at least 50 black men armed with guns and pitchforks. Gorsuch refused to leave, and a gun battle erupted. Gorsuch was shot and killed in the exchange of fire. Parker, his family, and the three formerly enslaved men fled to Canada. 38 others who were there that day were charged with treason for taking part in the confrontation. This included Castor Hanway, a white man who had tried to defuse the standoff. None of the charged were ever convicted. In the South, slave owners were outraged that no one was punished. Tensions between the North and South sharpened. As a result, the country moved closer to the Civil War, the bloody conflict that finally ended slave labor. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. And look, I think Bob Kramer's spot on. I think one of the biggest mistakes Hillary made, at least in my neighborhood, in 2016, where there were no yard signs anywhere. There were more Hillary for prison signs in my neighborhood than Hillary for president signs. And that was a strategic choice. And I think Bob's right. You know, you got to get out there and do that messaging. The one thing the right has done masterfully, really masterfully, one thing Trump has done masterfully is this idea of merchandising. You know, you've got people literally wearing made up pictures of him like Rambo on their chest. They've got huge flags out in front of their house of him, you know, with basically a Rambo character. Now I see the Marvel, him and Elon Musk are Marvel characters. They have done a masterful job of creating a cult-like, godlike figure out of Trump and then plastering it everywhere for people to see. And the weird thing is now this love affair that he's got with Musk, you know, praising him for striking, for firing striking workers, now going to make him the efficiency czar. Understand, Trump will throw him under the bus at some point. But the idea of Musk for efficiency czar is, wow, crazy. The Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago had a story on Musk's buying Twitter as one of the worst, one of the most historic failures, at least since the collapse. They wrote, the $13 billion that Elon Musk borrowed to buy Twitter has turned into the worst merger finance deal for banks since the 08-09 financial crisis. Evidently, seven banks gave him this money. And what they normally do is they offload it onto someone else and they make their money off the fees, off the transaction fees. Problem is, it's been such a catastrophic failure, so badly managed that they can't offload any of this debt without either incurring massive losses or being stuck with it. And as they point out in the article, the $44 billion acquisition, the loan soured, and they continue to underperform. And that's by design. You're going to destroy it, but you're going to destroy it in a way that only they get their message out. And look, Musk didn't buy Twitter to make it a great company or to make profit. He bought it to destroy what had been something of the left's attempt to reach people. You know, the digital yard sign, if you will. That's why. Because, you know, everyone, even the right was saying, you know, this is where the left gets all their information. We have to destroy that. And they have done it. Congratulations. They completely, completely destroyed it. And look, this is what the right does. They quash what you'll see out of any sanity. And then they do weird things. Understand, they dominate talk radio. They dominate cable news because billionaires have been funding it for years. We find out there's some Russian money, and we've known that for a while, too. And look, we're going to find out a whole lot more as the days, weeks, and months come along on who funds these right-wing message machines. But I find it ironic, and a listener sent me this tweet of this person who was on OAN, and I got to play the video clip because it's this is the most North Korea thing I think that I've ever seen. This is like the most North Korea propaganda news that you're ever going to see. Here is OAN.
He started a movement. Now he has a book to look back on the movement so far. It's called Save America, and it's a beautiful photographic documentary of Trump's presidency and beyond. The striking images show Trump combating the China virus, fighting terrorism, creating jobs, securing the border, unleashing American energy, revitalizing patriotism, and restoring the American spirit. It shows Trump defending our values, our families, our traditions, and our freedom. And it says that, if elected to a second term, the best is yet to come. On the very first page is the 45th president's mugshot. Printed on it in his handwriting, it says, "Never give up, never surrender." This is the main message of these pictures that will assault your eye to ensure that you understand that what he always says is true. In the end, they're not coming after him. They're coming after you. He's just standing in their way.
Wow. I mean, really, wow. I'll let come up with this. That's news. Evidently, that's news. Assault your eyes. No, what assaults my eyes is the fact that we have a media, people posing to be news, hawking books. That's what that was. That was a, hey, he has this new book. Just like he's got new shoes. Hey, he's got steaks. Hey, he's got, you name the merchandising gimmick. It's really incredible how the entire system is about fleecing the flock for one guy. When did the Republican Party completely become a cult? Now, I'm not sure I was allowed to play that clip or not, but I got to tell you, that's scary stuff. This is the kind of media propaganda that you get in North Korea or Russia. Or China. I mean, this is frightening. That's the punchline. Well, he's always right. You know, they're coming, you know, they're coming for us through him. No. We didn't break any crimes. We didn't break any laws. We didn't do it. He did. I want to hear your thoughts. I mean, seriously, it's really, this is a moment. This is a pivotal moment of the classic, which side are we on? And how do we save this country from the disaster that is, well, that? miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Freespeech.org, the website to check out the video. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show. Like us on Facebook, Instagram.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.